Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my good buddy, Patrick Corain, and we went through basically a crash course on rookie drafts this upcoming summer. We know lots of drafts are kicking off on the FFPC right now. A lot of our leagues are going to start doing their rookie drafts next week, so we just kind of went through a bunch of the major decision points that people are going to have in both regular and Superflex Dynasty rookie drafts. I know this is pretty niche for the main TakeCast channel, but I think a lot of you guys will get some actionable info out of it because Pat and I, we love this rookie class. We love these drafts, and I think we have some good insight. If you want to support the show, you can leave a rating or review on iTunes. You can subscribe to bonus shows on patreon.com/TakeCast, or you can create an account on StarStock and use the promo code DavisMatic and get a free $10. Now let's get into the show. All right, everyone, welcoming Pat Corain into the show. Pat has been on a TakeCast before, but with Overzet. So this is your maiden debut. Wow. On your own. Obviously, Pat and I have done a million podcasts together, but the reason why this was on the TakeCast feed and not the Sports Grid feed is I think that this is going to be good evergreen content for the next couple months because, you know, Pat, the leagues you and I are in, everyone's literally like itching. Like we got these DM threads, like when's a rookie draft start, like trading picks. But, yeah, you know, some normal people are going to do their rookie drafts in like August and stuff. So this will be good kind of evergreen-ish style content. And I didn't want it to get too buried on the Sports Grid feed. So, Pat, what we're going to do today is this is just going to be like the skeleton key to rookie drafting. Obviously, most of the leagues you and I play in are Superflex. So it's gonna lean pretty heavily that way. But really, for regular drafting, you just have to assume like, oh, every quarterback is gonna go 15 picks later. Well, that's interesting. Where do you think Trevor Lawrence, Lance, and Fields should go in non-Superflex, like the FFPC leagues, right, where it's one quarterback, tight end premium? Where do you think they should go?
I had Lawrence, Lance, and Fields ranked back to back to back at 14, 15, and 16 in my PPR ranks.
Yeah, which I think is about right. But I now think that the most popular form of fantasy football for nerds is Superflex, tight end premium, where you start 11 players and have very deep rosters. I think that is the preeminent league type that people are playing in these days.
Well, I like you. So we've bashed on the industry leagues a little bit just because people, you know, tend to be a bit more hesitant to trade and they want to make sure they're getting just enough value and they'll leave like 95% completed trades abandoned on the side of the road. Whereas in, you know, if you play in FFPC, FFWC, people actually just fire off trades. It's a lot more fun. But
yes,
these industry leagues, I really like how the trend towards Superflex, it is differentiating them. It is making playing in these leagues more fun because of the format itself, where you don't have as common of a high quality Superflex format. The FFPC just launched a Superflex format that I do like, but even that has a cut down to 16 players in the offseason. And I just don't really understand that. It's like, you know, it just kind of levels everything out in a way that I don't enjoy.
Well, you have to cut good players. So, yeah. And I guess what is interesting is all the high stakes leagues on FFPC are super flex. Like if you're trying to get into a $1,200, Leone and I are in a $1,500 one, it's super flex. So I do think that it's clearly trending that way. I do. I really hate the FFPC roster cut down. It makes the picks less valuable. So like a second round pick, a future second round pick in one of these best ball leagues where we have 30 man rosters and we start 11 players, two quarterbacks. The second round pick is like a guy you're expecting to get points out of.
in the upcoming year, a second round pick in these FFPC leagues, you may literally never start that guy. You know, you might take Blake Jarwin or whatever because it's tight end premium. And then, you know, Blake Jarwin doesn't come back from his ACL or whatever, and you cut him. But it is the pool is heavy on the veterans. So I thought kind of just what we do is go through our rankings, see where we agree and disagree. I tiered my rankings out. So I have seven tiers. My first tier, I think this is inarguable. It's Lawrence, Fields, Lance, Chase, and Pitts. I think that is the clear top tier. Obviously, in non-Superflex, your top tier would just be Chase and Pitts. Maybe in non-Superflex, you'd put Najee Harris in there just because those running back points year one and year two are going to be so valuable in non-Superflex. But I think that is the inarguable top tier for Superflex drafts.
Well, it's a little disrespectful to Zach Wilson, the number two pick in the draft. I mean, it's one thing to have Pitts over Wilson, which I think is totally fine. You think it's very, very bad that I have it the other way. But to not even include Wilson in the tier is the number two pick. I mean, this guy, the Jets franchise is tied to him for the next 3-4 years. He's got a big arm. He's mobile. And he's playing in the exact same system that we're all excited about Lance to be in. So I don't quite understand kind of the disrespect of not even having him in the tier.
Well, I guess one thing is I'm not certain how much he is going to run. I can't proclaim to know a ton about Mike LaFleur. Maybe you know more about him. So he is the New York Jets offensive coordinator. I think in general, my concerns about Wilson are I don't like defensive head coaches, which Zach Wilson has. You know, that's not great, the defensive head coach setup. Like, I mean, just how many times have we seen this story play out where young quarterback gets drafted, he has a defensive head coach, a first-time offensive coordinator, and it just doesn't quite come together for him. I also just have questions about Zach Wilson's ability. You know, was really not that strong as a freshman and a sophomore, had the crazy season at BYU. And also, a big thing that you just said there is you implicated the draft capital. I just don't view the Jets as being that smart of a team. I view it as a big mistake that they did not take Justin Fields. I still kind of think it was a mistake that the 49ers didn't take Justin Fields. So that is weighing into my decision as well. And I don't view NFL decision makers as unimpeachable. Now, does Zach Wilson get a longer leash than Fields? Yeah. Probably.
Because I also think, you know, you've got a new administration here. Whereas with the Bears, these guys could all be out after the year. If Fields doesn't look good, they're all out. So now you've got Fields restarting with an entire, you know, it's a total wild card what he gets in year two, and he's got to learn a whole new system potentially. So that's a real red flag. Whereas, you know, I don't know that much about LaFleur, but he is a Shanahan guy. He's bringing the Shanahan system. It looks like they're drafting for the Shanahan system with the linemen and stuff, right? So I think they're going to be at least something we're familiar with. He's not Kyle Shanahan. He's not going to be as creative, but we generally know that they're going to be probably rolling him out. There's going to be a lot of play action. So I'm comfortable with the idea that he's going to be able to run around a little bit, make some big throws. And I guess one of the things for me is that when you're ranking these, are you thinking like, I'm advising someone to hold this guy for the next 2 years, or I'm saying like, hey, take this guy because he's going to provide you the biggest value gain, and you should always be open to trading them down the line. Because similar guys like this are Daniel Jones. Like, Daniel Jones was a bad real life pick, but he can run around. The franchise was tied to him, and everyone got really excited about Daniel Jones for a minute. And that was a huge selling window. You could make, I have Lawrence in a draft because I traded away Daniel Jones. So
yeah,
I just think with the positional value, like you're going to have to go through some valleys with Kyle Pitts, most likely, unless he
comes out right away, 700 yards, 5 touchdowns as a rookie. Yeah.
But the probability of that is pretty low given what we've seen historically from tight ends. It's possible. The fact that it's even in his range of outcomes shows what an amazing tight end prospect he is, but it's hardly a lock given what we've seen historically at the tight end position. And even you know, guys like Chase, you know, all these running backs, like there's going to be valleys with these guys too. So I just think the positional value of Zach Wilson, you're probably going to be able to get more for a, you know, than a Kyle Pitts for him at some point. You know, you're going to be able to get more than maybe even a Jamar Chase for him if he flashes the way I think he can flash.
Yeah. So one of the things is I expect that I'm not the only person that feels this way about Zach Wilson, and that there's just going to be a little bit of Jets stink on him in the trading market. By the way, the same way that there is a Giants stink on Daniel Jones, like Daniel Jones, you could get a reasonable package for, but at this point people are like, and reasonable people are like, well, he could be out of a job in a year. He could go the Mitch Trubisky route.
You're going to need to be nimble with Zach Wilson. But, yeah, you know, during his rookie year, I traded away Daniel Jones in a second for what became Herbert and Lawrence. So, like, there's opportunity here if you're going to be nimble and willing to sell this guy when the window presents itself. I don't think that stink is going to be the type of thing that prevents a sell window. It's the type of thing where if he's not playing well, people are going to be out. But if he, you know, the stink is already on. The stink is like baked in right now. The stink is why he's not in your tier.
Right.
So it's not like the stink is going to come and ruin this. The stink is why you can get him at a discount in the first place. My dog Murphy really likes the Zach Wilson call.
I think Murphy's
with you. That was an angry bark.
Yeah, I think he's like, dude, Corrine, shut up. Because let me tell you this: if Pitts has like his 85th percentile rookie season, you're going to be able to trade Kyle Pitts for the moon. You'll be able to get trade Kyle Pitts for, you know, Derrick Henry. You'll be able to trade him for someone great. Murphy, I definitely can tell that he agrees with me on this take. And so that's why I am there with Kyle Pitts. I would definitely take Kyle Pitts ahead of Wilson. What I'm struggling with is I just want Kyle Pitts on my teams, but I'm picking in a lot of spots where I'm going to have to be picking between Trey Lance and Kyle Pitts. And it does feel like a mistake to take Kyle Pitts ahead of Trey Lance, because Trey Lance could just play bad as a rookie and, you know, be benched for Jimmy G or whatever, but he's going to run enough and he's in that Shanahan system that I think regardless, Trey Lance is going to hold his draft day value for like 18 months, regardless of what he does on the field, I think.
Yeah. And Trey Lance could be like the 105 in startups next year. Like Trey Lance is I think you're crazy if you take Trey Lance over Kyle Pitts. The correlation between these tight end prospects and the hits is so low. So, yeah, I think Trey Lance, you can. Murphy, come on, man.
Yeah, I think that is a good point. I think we could see a rise for Lance similar to what we saw with Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, where they were they just end up being like almost untouchable dynasty assets. So.
Before we move on, I did want to ask you, because I want to say two things. One, I'm not even like dead set on Wilson ahead of Pitts, because Pitts is an incredible prospect. I just want you to put Wilson in the tier with Pitts. But the other thing I'll ask is, like, with PPR rankings, the people do not like my Kyle Pitts ranking in PPR. They're really mad about my PPR ranking of Kyle Pitts. One, I have Rashad Bateman ahead of him, which I'm higher on Bateman than Waddle, but I also have Waddle ahead of him, and I also have Javonte Williams ahead of him. So I have Kyle Pitts seventh in PPR, non-tight end premium. Where are you at on that?
Bateman ahead of Pitts?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
No, that it's an almost non-defensible position. I love Bateman. I love the Ravens. There is no scenario where Bateman appreciates enough that you are able to flip him for a crazy return. In year one. What would he do in year one that could make him have more startup value than Kyle Pitts? I really don't see it.
Yeah. All right. That's a fair point. My thing with wide receivers is that it's like the one spot where we actually have the ability to predict which ones of these guys are
gonna
going to be good.
Yeah.
And when we ignore that, it often is extremely, extremely painful. Like if you just go look back at previous draft classes and see like where Kevin White was drafted, where Josh Doctson was drafted, like it is a painful lesson to ignore what we know about wide receiver prospects, which is that we want guys who are very productive over their entire careers. Bateman was extremely productive. We want guys who broke out early, broke out as a sophomore. He followed it up with an excellent, an amazing 48% dominator rating in his final season. Yards per route run off the charts, way better than his teammates in yards per route run. He declared early. He's got everything we're looking for from a wide receiver prospect. The only thing was the draft capital. Is the NFL going to buy into this guy? Do the film guys like him enough to put their stamp on him? They did. He goes in the first round of the NFL draft. The bet on Bateman is that he's good, and we have strong evidence that he is good at a position where that evidence really matters. So I just want to bet on
the what if you take away the tight end label from Pitts, though, and just put him in everything as a wide receiver? He would come out the same way. First non-quarterback drafted, insane market share when he plays, off the charts measurables, film guys says he's great, NFL says he's great. Like, if you just labeled Pitts as a wide receiver, everything that is true about Bateman or Chase would be true of Pitts as well. And I don't expect Atlanta to be sending him out there to block.
Pitts has a 19% career market share of yards. I mean, he is not, as a wide receiver prospect, he is not a bulletproof wide receiver prospect. He's an extremely high upside wide receiver prospect, but I would have him a tick below Bateman just in terms of he just wasn't as productive. Now, again, he was playing the tight end position. If he had been actually playing wide receiver, he probably would.
He got hurt also. So he didn't even play.
That's for games played.
Yeah.
That's in games played.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess you move his breakout age to 21, not as good. Yeah. I'm with you on Bateman. I have, in my rankings, I have Bateman behind Waddle, but ahead of Devonta Smith, ahead of Javonte Williams. So real quick, tier two for me, Zach Wilson, Najee Harris, ETN. I suspect I probably will not end up with any of these guys in my rookie drafts, because I also suspect that some drafters are going to take Harris ahead of Zach Wilson. Some drafters might even take Najee Harris ahead of Ja'Marr Chase. I don't think anyone, the fantasy football nerds are completely enamored with Kyle Pitts. I've seen Pitts already go 101 in some drafts. People just really want Kyle Pitts, but people see Najee Harris's landing spot in Pittsburgh and they say, I want that dude. I want that dude getting the guaranteed touches. And then, by the way, for ETN, I think they see what happened with DeAndre Swift, where sure, it wasn't completely immediate that he'd be getting all these touches, but that he was going to be working in the passing game. ETN is tied to Trevor Lawrence. ETN is tied to an offense we expect to be decent, although I think their head coaching and offensive coordinator situation seems bad. I think the Jaguars are going to be very inefficient year one with too many first down runs.
Bevel's that bad.
He really likes to establish it. Bevel does.
Yeah.
And so I think I think the first 8 weeks of the season, we are going to see a lot of James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, way more than we want to see.
Carlos Hyde. This guy played Adrian Peterson last year.
Yeah. And by the way, there was a gigantic dip buying opportunity for Cam Akers last year. I know, because I sold Cam Akers during that I traded for him. In one league, I traded him away because Danny Kelly from The Ringer knew catnip for me, and he offered me Mecole Hardman and a pick. I accepted Mecole Hardman and a pick
That's pretty smart.
Yeah. I mean, he knew what he was doing. But yeah, I think that there will be a dip buying opportunity on ETN. But yeah, I mean, do you anticipate leaving any draft with Najee Harris? I assume you have Bateman ranked very closely to him.
I have Najee Harris ahead. I've got Chase. So non-Superflex, I've got Chase, Harris, ETN, Bateman. Yeah. I do. I think it's possible I leave drafts with Najee Harris. I have Harris ranked 7th in Superflex, but I've got the 106 in one of these leagues and was kind of talking out options. We need a running back. I do have Harris ahead of ETN. You know, I didn't want to put Harris ahead of ETN, but God, I mean, I was looking at like guys who just get drafted as workhorses, even TJ Yeldon,
yeah,
had 13 points a game in his rookie year, and TJ Yeldon was terrible. So it's like, he honestly can be terrible and still put up a usable season.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah. I mean, James Conner was never really good for the Steelers.
Right. By the way, did you know TJ Yeldon's name is Timothy Antonio Yeldon? Where's the J?
Is he a junior? He's got to be a junior,
oh,
right?
Oh, he's a junior. Okay.
I don't know if that's true. I would just assume that's where the J came from.
I think you're right. He's a junior. So it's Timothy Jr.
Timothy Jr. TJ.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, TJ. Got it.
I actually love TJ Yeldon. That's a guy who stole a bunch of my money over the years in DFS. So where I think the draft gets really spicy then is if you have a later first round pick, because if someone makes a mistake ahead of you, like, oh, okay, I will just draft ETN or Zach Wilson or whoever. But 9 through 13, I have Mac Jones, Jalen Waddle, Bateman, Devonta Smith, Javonte Williams. These rankings basically guarantee I won't get Devonta Smith because Bateman will almost always be on the board when he's there. I expect the ranking that will ruffle people's feathers is Javonte Williams. I expect the market to treat him in the same tier as Harris and ETN because the Broncos traded up for him. Their offense actually should probably be pretty good. Melvin Gordon is entering in year 7 of the NFL now, I think. Like he just doesn't really strike me as someone to keep Javonte off the field. I mean, he was very inefficient last year. He was not good.
And a free agent after the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that was one of the reactions that I got. I have Javonte Williams 7th. Javonte Williams 6th in PPR and 11th in Superflex. And yeah, one of the reactions that I got was why so low on Javonte Williams? So you have him even 2 spots lower than me, but people think my rank's low.
Yeah.
So I think you're exactly right that the market is going to have him kind of right behind ETN, probably ahead of Bateman and Waddle. I don't know. I mean, I guess I wouldn't rule out Melvin Gordon re-signing there. If you're Melvin Gordon, I think you'd be happy with a 1-year deal on the cheap. The other thing with Williams is that I do like his receiving profile. He was an efficient receiver, but he was not the primary receiver in his own college offense. And Melvin Gordon profiles in a way where I think Javonte Williams is probably going to take the early down work first, and Melvin Gordon can hang on to some of the receiving stuff as a way of being involved in the offense. If that ends up happening and Melvin Gordon resigns or they bring in someone else, you can start to see how Javonte kind of gets pigenholed as like
the early down guy.
And kind of like a David Montgomery situation where David Montgomery, you know, he could catch passes. We saw last year after Cohen got hurt that, oh yeah, he could be a 3-down guy. But the path, it's never as simple as, you know, Melvin Gordon's going to leave, then they don't bring in anybody, and Javonte Williams is a workhorse. Like, there's a little bit of concern here. And as opposed to ETN, where I think he's going to come in, I mean, they've already said he's going to come in as the pass catcher and basically work his way into the rushing. That's what we want. That's way, way better than a guy coming in the other way and trying to work his way to the pass catching work. So I just, I think that profile of how he earns playing time, that's a bit concerning. And it's not even a given that he has the backfield to himself next year.
Yeah. I can't imagine being on the clock and even Waddle and Smith, like I cannot imagine. And I don't even really like Devonta Smith, though I guess you could argue Smith did kind of end up in an ideal spot where he doesn't really like, we love Jalen Reagor, but you know, Devonta Smith won a Heisman. The team spent a first round pick on him. They traded in order to select him. Like, he's going to have every opportunity, like in a way that Reagor really didn't, because Reagor was hurt. Reagor was pigeonholed into that 9 route role early on because of the presence of Zach Ertz, Alshon Jeffery, Travis Fulgham. Like, Reagor had like a total nightmare rookie season, in a way that I don't expect Devonta Smith to have the nightmare rookie season, like QB controversy and all that stuff. But I don't even like Devonta Smith, but he's going to have a chance to earn a bunch of targets year one, I think.
We'll see. I'm worried.
I know
for
you
Smith.
Hate the wide receiver coach.
I hate the wide receiver coach. And Evan Silva brought up a point on the Established Run podcast about the Colts, how they rotate their wide receivers a lot. And my concern with the Eagles is that they were rotating their outside wide receivers a ton down the stretch. was killing Rager's value because he's only running like 60% of the routes you'd expect. And I think the exact same thing could happen to Devonta Smith. I don't know. So his saving grace could be if he's their primary slot guy and getting outside snaps, in which case he does have a really good chance to earn a bunch of targets. But if they keep doing what they were doing last year, it's going to suck for everyone. So this isn't like a Rager take. This is the Eagles wide receivers might not be where you want to put your money take.
Yeah. All right. The next tier, this was the tier of guys who basically gained value during the NFL draft, because I think this, the first 13 guys, Lawrence, Fields, Lance, Chase, Pitts, Wilson, Harris, Etienne, Mac Jones, Jalen Waddle, Bateman, Devonta Smith, Javonte Williams. I think everyone thought those guys are in the first round conversation regardless of how the NFL drafts falls. And then I think there were just a lot of question marks based on draft capital spent, where they went. So my tier four is Terrace Marshall. I thought this was like the nut landing spot for him. And now at first I was like, well, Carolina, is there enough targets, quarterback situation, whatever. But then I just zoomed out a little bit and I realized, okay, well, Curtis Samuel's targets are vacated. They gave a 7% target share to Ian Thomas last year. Oh, and who's his offensive coordinator? The guy who made him a superstar at LSU. And by the way, Marshall had a bunch of medical red flags. I would think Joe Brady would probably have some good insight on that. Like,
oh, I like that point.
I'm gonna text my buddy Ed Orgeron. That's not how you say his name. The LSU head coach, and be like, oh, you know what's actually going on with Terrace Marshall? Like, I think that this is actually a case of narrative street that is going to work out. That is going to be a case of the narrative street actually having some signal instead of just being total noise. Then I have Rondale. Then I have Elijah. I expect Jameson Crowder is not going to be on the New York Jets come the week one. I think he will be, they can save a bunch of money.
They already talked about cutting him before they drafted him.
Yep. Then Trey Sermon lands in a really solid spot. I'm not that enamored with him. I imagine a lot of the time I'll be able to choose between Trey Sermon and Elijah Moore. I would prefer Elijah. Pat Freiermuth, I moved way up in my rankings from pre-draft to now. Second round draft capital, a team that I imagine he will probably get on the field pretty soon for Pittsburgh. I liked him enough as a prospect. And, you know, we play in these tight end premium leagues where if you can get the tight end 10 in the second round of your draft and hold him for 3 years, that becomes an appreciable asset. Then Kadarius Toney, who I won't take him. Like, even if he's on the board here for me, I can't imagine taking him. And then Deami Brown.
Higher than me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a first round wide receiver. Like, yep. You know, what can you do?
There's a certain type of first round wide receiver that I am extremely comfortable betting against. And yeah. Kadarius Toney is that wide receiver.
All right. So what are your general thoughts on this tier?
Well, so you've made me want to move up Terrace Marshall. I have Rondale Moore 14th, Elijah Moore 15th, and Terrace Marshall 16th with, you know, everyone. This is Superflex and we've covered everyone above that. I think, you know, Rondale Moore landed in the perfect spot.
I mean, nut. You could not have asked him to go to a better spot.
Because he's going to be a full-time slot guy, which we knew. But this is a team where being a full-time slot guy can mean being a full-time player. And he's going to potentially have a vertical component to his game, which I don't think he would have had in almost any other setting. So I love this. And then Elijah Moore, I also think that Crowder will be off the team. And he's a... I mean, the size isn't there, but other than that, his prospect
profile such a good really prospect. Good. Yeah.
Such a good prospect. I mean, a better on paper prospect than Terrace Marshall, even if you kind of squint a little bit with Terrace Marshall. I mean, you know, we make excuses for him being behind Jefferson and Chase and all that, but like he still didn't do it until they left. So there is a real boom bust element to his profile. He did have a decent stretch before he got hurt, in 2019. But I think that the floor is a lot lower with Marshall, although the ceiling is pretty high. So I am tempted to move him up. Give me a little bit more thoughts on Marshall in comparison to the Moores.
I expect that Robbie Anderson is now, he's got Robbie Anderson is got to be 30. Okay, he's 20. Wow, I'm way off. How is Robbie Anderson so young? Yeah, so he's on the last year of his deal. Now, Matt Rhule loved Robbie Anderson, coached him at Temple, right? We're out the narrative street.
people
were not in on the narrative, though. They didn't realize it until the season started, really. Robbie Anderson was like free in best ball drafts last year. He was going third out of DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Robbie Anderson. And Robbie's a good player. And obviously we all love DJ Moore. Like DJ Moore is like the nerd icon.
He's literally every single dynasty ranks I do has a DJ Moore.
Post. Yeah. Like you prove that you're a dynasty nerd by like ranking DJ Moore, like wide receiver four I wouldn't take DJ Moore for Hopkins straight up. Like that's how you prove
that's
your
true.
Medal. I know. So the thing with Marshall is I anticipate that they want to play him outside, which means he fits perfectly. DJ Moore, big slot. Robbie Anderson is the flanker. Terrace Marshall, classic X. Now, I think he could play in the slot just based off of watching what he did at LSU. Like, I don't think he would have a problem transitioning there if Carolina moves on from Rhule, moves on from Brady. Now, I don't anticipate that happening immediately. I think there should be targets available also immediately. I mean, the Panthers are like the most target condensed team in the NFL. It's not mattered who's coached them. Doesn't matter if it was Rhule or Riviera. All their targets go to four guys. The three wide receivers and Christian McCaffrey. They don't throw to a tight end. They don't even have a good tight end on the roster. They also don't have any good reserve wide receivers on the roster. Like this is not the Falcons where Russell Gage or Brandon Powell or Olamide Zaccheaus sub in. It's just the three dudes. Like last year, outside of Anderson, Moore, Samuel, and the combination of Mike Davis and McCaffrey, Ian Thomas earned 31 targets. Rodney Smith earned 11. Alex Arma, a fullback, earned 9. The most targets that another wide receiver had was Farrell Cooper with 8. So I just anticipate him coming in and basically, now he's not going to get the carries that Curtis Samuel had, but 90 targets, 65 receptions, rookie year. I would be happy with that.
And you want to talk about how these assets appreciate, they do it the way T. Higgins just did it. Like you show up, you're good. Everyone sees that you're good. The numbers say you're good. And then the guy blocking you leaves, which is the exact thing that could happen here with Robbie Anderson on the last year of his deal. And then everyone gets super excited about it, just like I am about T. Higgins, even still with Chase drafted. I think T. Higgins is going to be valued. So, yeah, I think that it's a pretty good case for Marshall. I'll probably move him ahead of the Moores.
Yeah. I like Rondale Moore. I hope to get him in some of these drafts. But, I mean, look, A.J. Green is going to play way more than anyone wants him to. I'm just gonna put that out there right now. It would not surprise me to start the year if the three wide receiver set is Kirk, Hopkins, A.J. Green, Edmonds, and then Rondale is the rotational fourth guy. I literally don't even know. Arizona moved on from Dan Arnold. I literally don't even know what they have.
Max Williams?
Max Williams. Sure. I don't. And Andy Isabella still on the roster. Don't know what their plans are there. I imagine he's going to make the, I think he'll probably make the, cause he's a punt returner too, right?
Yeah. He'll make the team, but it's not, he's rotational depth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I don't know. Do you want to give the spiel on Kadarius Toney?
Well, I mean, I already kind of talked about like the Josh Doctsons and the Kevin Whites and, you know, avoiding these bad wide receiver prospects at all costs. I think he's even worse than, you know, those guys. Like he's worse in the sense that like all the film guys when the Giants took him were like, what are they thinking? This guy stinks. You know, like he's got highlights, but if you watch his film, it's not there. Everything I've read about like his, you know, route running, he's just like, he totally freelances. He just kind of makes stuff up as he goes along. I mean, he sounds like a total nightmare for an offensive coordinator. So it's not even just like I'm looking at my spreadsheet and he's looks like, you know, the worst first round pick in years, which he does. But the guys looking at the film are going, he looks like the worst first round pick in years. And now he lands in a situation where they just signed Galladay. They've got Shepard. They've got Slayton. Like, there's guys who can play on this roster. It's not like he's just falling into targets here. So he actually has to be good to even earn, like, you know, rotational kind of like he's got to be good just to like get a couple spike weeks in a best ball league, you know, like it's a really bad situation for immediate production. And the profile says there's probably never going to be any production. So I mean, on the other hand, well, actually just one more thing to bash him. The one out I think he had was converting to running back. And now it's not
what you want.
Saquon Barkley. So that's not happening. He's not going to be a pass catching running back on this team either. He's totally boxed out. I think at a certain point though, you do have to say, well, he was a first round pick and like, we could all be really wrong. And like, that's worth something. So I have him, you know, what, in the late second, I've got him at 21 in Superflex, 19th in PPR. You know, if I'm in an industry league and everyone decides he's useless, I will grab him.
If Kadarius Toney is sitting there at Jefferson. Yeah. If he's sitting there at the 302, yeah. Like, come on. You know what I mean?
Right. I have some Van Jefferson shares. Cause like it got late enough in these industry leagues where it's like, all right, well, he was a second round pick and that's worth something. I'm pretty sure he sucks too, but that's where I'm at with Toney.
Yeah. All right. Tier three. Amari Rodgers, who I have way boosted up in my stuff compared to where he was pre-draft. I think it was a great landing spot. I think he should play right away. Green Bay has success with this style player, right? Ty Montgomery converted slot wide receiver to running back. Rodgers is 5'9", 210 pounds. It's just, that's like catnip to me. Like a guy, like I love Amari Rodgers.
Do you think he's like, I know he's kind of a Debo Samuel type guy. I've heard that.
Yeah.
And but his ADOT wasn't particularly low. Like, do you think he'll actually play kind of a hybrid role? He looked like a slot wide receiver to me. I'm having trouble.
I just think the possibility is there. That's all. Okay. I just think the possibility is there. Amari Rodgers, Michael Carter, Davis Mills, Kyle Trask. Those are, you know, end of the second round style guys in Superflex. Those are total scratch offs, but I don't think this is a very deep class. So I think they are usable. I think they are worthwhile lottery tickets. Tylan Wallace, Anthony Schwartz, who has no production but is super young. Like he's literally like one of the youngest players overall in the draft.
Good yards per route run too. He was efficient. He's not just fast. I think he could be something.
Yeah, Nico Collins, whatever. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I just think he's gonna end up getting a bunch of bad volume his rookie year and become an appreciable asset. Chuba Hubbard, I actually think landed in a great spot where he's not going to appreciate year one, but I do think he becomes the clear handcuff to McCaffrey with the exit of Mike Davis. They've shown, you know, Reggie Bonifant and Alex Armaad that they have no interest in playing those guys. Tutu Atwell, just because of the draft capital, I don't really believe in him at all. And then Kenneth Gainwell, do you have a favorite from this list?
Well, there's a couple guys not on the list that I think should be
in this tier.
Okay.
Hit me.
Hunter Long, which I can see maybe why you didn't want to include him since he landed in Miami, but he is a third round pick. He was a very, very good pass catcher in college. We needed the day two draft capital with him because bit of a kind of wild card type prospect, but extremely good in yards per route run, kind of a wide receiver level yards per route run, playing at the tight end position and very, very productive. So I think he could be a real hit. I have him one spot ahead of Pat Freiermuth because I don't like the Steelers offense going forward. I don't think that he's going to be that productive this year with Ebron still there. And I think Hunter Long with the day three or the third round draft capital, not too far off where Freiermuth was as a second round pick. So Hunter Long, I think, can shape up as a huge value in these tight end premium leagues. And then Ramondre Stevenson is another guy that I like a lot.
Yeah, he should probably be in this tier too. It's a great landing spot. He was productive, though did not test well at Oklahoma's pro day, but it, you know, Patriots running back, it doesn't really matter.
Patriots running back, he can catch passes and he's 230 pounds. I think he's basically the new Rex Burkhead. And the move with the Patriots running backs has been take the cheap guy every year. He's going to be the cheap guy. James White's going to be gone soon. I don't think there's a ton in front of him with Damian Harris right? So you have the potential for him to get playing time a number of ways. And we're about to move to Mac Jones at quarterback. So the value of the running backs is going to increase in a Mac Jones offense. As we look to the back half of 2021 and entering 2022, I think there's going to be more excitement about this backfield again. And he could take a pretty big piece of that backfield.
Yeah. All right. Then tier six, tier seven. Some of the names I will probably be targeting a ton. Demetric Felton, I saw that as a good landing spot in Cleveland because they need both. They don't have a clear third running back and they don't have a clear third wide receiver. Like guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones and Rashard Higgins, like, you know, who cares? And, you know, they've been playing what Dearness Johnson ran like a 4.8, 440.
Yeah.
You know, like they just don't have anyone athletic in their reserve positions at either spot. So I could see, you know, 40 manufactured touches as a rookie for Felton and then building upon that. Tamorian Terry, I liked pre-draft a little bit just as like a bigger bodied wide receiver. He seems like someone who could find his way. He did get drafted. Maybe he just signed as an undrafted. Yeah, he signed as an undrafted free agent, but with the Seahawks. And he might be better than Dwayne Eskridge.
where did you rank Eskridge?
I ranked Eskridge 32 just based off of draft capital, very similar to Tony, but I couldn't take him. And I assume he'll be off the board by the time I
have him 22. I mean, the draft capital matters, man. Like
he's such a bad prospect, though.
He's such a bad prospect, but he was a really good kick returner. So he's probably active game day, right? You don't draft him in the second round. And they talked about a special teams play when they took him. So it's like hard for me to imagine how he's not your kick returner with that type of draft capital and that justification. So that means he's active. And that means he's probably the wide receiver 3 or 4.
Yeah, David Moore is gone.
David Moore's gone. He's got Freddie Swain blocking him. So he could pretty easily be the wide receiver 3 in San Francisco. And he had a pretty good yards per route run throughout his career. So it's like, I don't think he's like a total bum. He's not a good bet to be like a stud. But as you mentioned, this is not a deep class. So once you're down here, like I have him after Kadarius Toney. Like once Kadarius Toney, you see Kadarius Toney in my ranks, that is a massive tier break.
It's like honestly, from tier 4 to tier 7 after Kadarius Toney, it's like, who cares? It's take whoever you want.
So you might as well take a guy who's probably going to be active at wide receiver for the Seahawks every game this year.
Yeah. All right. A couple of other dart throws. Cornell Powell got drafted by the Chiefs. I have no idea if he is any good or not. He really did not produce very much in college. Marquez Stevenson, I liked him a lot as a prospect just because he was so productive in that air raid style offense.
Another special teams guy too.
There we go. And then Amir Smith-Marset, just because he was like a crazy spark athlete. And Minnesota has had no third wide receiver production in years, it feels like. It just feels like they have the two guys. And Kyle Rudolph is gone now, a member of the he's on the Giants now.
Who are some of the returner, by the way? So he's bang, likely bang. To make the team. Yep.
So who are some of the dart throws you have?
I still have Brevin Jordan in the dart throw list.
Yes. Yes. I agree for sure.
In Houston, I mean, there's lots of opportunity in Houston. And he was a fourth round pick, so it's not like, you know, he's dead.
Developmental tight end.
Yeah. Still have Seth Williams, sixth round pick. He's probably going to do nothing, but he had such a good profile before the day 3 draft capital. And even with the day 3 draft capital, like he kind of profiles maybe like a Rashard Higgins where like, you know, I think he's going to stick in the league.
Yeah. And he's so buried though. I mean, I don't know if he could have found a depth chart to be more buried.
It's awful. It's really awful.
Like he's like their seventh pass catcher probably.
Yeah, and they don't have a quarterback, but other than that it's a great landing spot. So yeah, I'm not excited about, but I mean it's a home run swing, and as I talked about, you know, we don't have too much depth here. The opportunity cost of taking the home run swing on Seth Williams is pretty low. Elijah Mitchell, I really like him. sub 4.440, sub 7.3 cone. He's well-rounded as a running back. He can catch a little bit. He's a sixth round pick, but to San Francisco. So if he makes the roster, we're pretty interested.
Look, we bid on Jamichael Hasty. We can bid on Elijah Mitchell.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think he's someone definitely, like, I have him 35th. I have him ahead of Chuba Hubbard just because, like, okay, I can hold Hubbard for, you know, 3 years on my bench and maybe he fills in for like six games and I'm happy I have him, but I'd rather kind of take the home run swing in this range. Like, Hubbard's chance, I have Hubbard way too low based on his career outlook, but I'm just like, you know, sure, a lot of the guys ahead of you are going to be out of the league, but are you ever going to provide me?
Are you ever going to produce?
Yeah.
My last dart throw is Noah Gray. He got drafted by the Chiefs as the ninth tight end. He is above average in all athletic metrics. He had a 51 target season in 2019. Now, I mean, he's like, this is not Travis Kelce or whatever, but they already have the blocking tight end on the roster. Nick Kizer.
Right.
So my thought is maybe they see a little bit of receiving talent here in Noah Gray. I don't even know if he makes the team, but a Chiefs receiving tight end who makes the team, who sticks on the team, that's worth a fifth round rookie pick or whatever.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Where did you have Gainwell ranked?
I had Gainwell ranked 31 as the final guy in tier five. My thought is he probably just replaces Boston Scott as the passing down back and the immediate handcuff, maybe works his way into a timeshare in the latter half of year one. Not a ton of draft capital, way less draft capital. I thought he could have been a second round pick.
Me too.
Did not do that. Not the worst landing spot, not the best landing spot. I thought it was net about fine. But you know, clearly behind, you know, Trey Sermon now, where I did not feel that way before the draft. Yeah.
Yeah. I have him 23 right behind Eskridge in that, you know, rank your favorite home run swings range after Tony. But yeah, it was a pretty rough day for Gainwell and Seth Williams. Those are two of my favorite pre-draft prospects that I had to bump down a lot.
Yeah. All right, everyone. There you go. That was a crash course on your rookie drafts. Everyone make sure to follow Pat on Twitter. Subscribe to Ship Chasing and read all Pat's stuff on ETR, and we'll be back next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.